If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Good evening, my friends. It is Thursday. Welcome to The Rational Revolution. I am Chris Elfheim, your host here, where we do our very, very best to have conversations that are not only entertaining, but educational, and perhaps a little bit to open up our minds to different perspectives. With me, I have the fabulous, the red. You're wearing black, but a little bit of red.
It's red lettering.
It's red lettering. My friend from a long time back and continues on today, Mr. Dean Rash of the De Pere City Council. Is that what you go by?
Council? Yeah, we'll go by that.
My old friend Dean Rash. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Last week, if anybody was paying attention, we talked about some city politics issues, issues that affect your kitchen table and maybe some insight as to how things work and why we do things the way that we do. This week, we are rolling into some state issues, and I expect we may disagree a little bit more this week.
Yeah, as we talked earlier, I think we might disagree a little bit here and there.
But we're going to do it. And again, the goal here is not that we need to agree, and we're not going to try and convince each other otherwise. But in a conversation, we should be able to at least hear someone else's perspective, maybe create a little empathy as to why they think that way, why they feel that way. And then add that into how we think and be better humans going on. So, state politics, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm so excited. You know, I've been thinking about this for weeks. I was just itching to get talking about state politics.
At least 1 week. I told you we were going to do it.
Overachiever. I was, you know.
You're ready?
Yeah.
In case that pops up?
Just in case.
Yeah. All right. So, looking at the headlines, we got all kinds of things we could talk about. But let's start off with the conversation of Wisconsin income tax. Wisconsin income tax has been in the news, and it brought up again. The GOP, of course, claims that they're trying to cut taxes for everyone and that Governor Evers vetoes everything. Governor Evers has a plan or had a plan for taxes, and the GOP didn't like that. So let's just talk about income taxes. I'm going to give us the baseline first, and then I'll let you chime in. So as a baseline, as a reminder, in Wisconsin, we have an income tax that ranges, the bands that we deal with range from 3.5% to 7.65%. Those are our bands for income taxes. Most people by far are in the 5.3% income tax bracket. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay. Now, it's interesting, I think, right away in the tax conversation, I was pulling up some numbers, just pure Google-ish type numbers, so don't get crazy on it. But I think this is valid information, just to kind of put it in perspective. So if you have someone, and we're talking singles, we're not adding in families, kids, or anything like that. So if you have a single person in the state of Wisconsin who is making $70,000 a year, $70,000, that's their gross income, what do you expect they'd be paying in taxes? State taxes.
So if we're going into that 5% range, I'd be looking at about $3,500 a year. I'm doing simple math, not the points and all that stuff.
It would be simple math. And I'm going to round this in and include it in their total tax, so state and federal. So the total tax on someone who lives in Wisconsin would be $10,908.
Okay.
That's state and Fed combined.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to take that up and I'm going to show you if you made $100,000.
Okay.
Same math, $100,000, living in Wisconsin. What do you think the tax would be?
I would go with $12,000 based on what you just did before that.
That would make sense though, wouldn't it?
It would.
That's not true.
Oh,
the answer is The answer is $27,410. Interesting, isn't it?
I remember a phrasing called fuzzy math once, and now I've got some fuzzy math.
I know. Now I'm going to take it up to $150,000. Now let's go $200,000. $200,000 household income. Again, no deductions, no anything.
Okay. So based on the math we're doing right now, we went from 10 to 27. I'm going to go 22. Just because it doesn't make sense.
The answer is I didn't Google that one.
Well, How am I? So then I'm right. Okay.
No, actually, the reason I bring up 200,000, guess how many households in the United States, and that number does reflect over to Wisconsin, actually make 200,000
as singles or as families?
It's actually household.
Household?
Household income.
Okay.
What percentage of people in the country make more than 200 household income, $200,000 a year?
Let's go percentage because that'll be easier than guessing numbers.
Yes.
Let's say households over 200,000. I will say 14%.
12 is the answer.
Oh, that was my 12. First. Can I honestly say it was my first guess?
That's not a bad guess. I'll give it a snap. The reason I bring that up is just to first put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. Where are people? Where do they fall? And really, what does that mean? And I think that before we get in too crazy, and you know I'm a purple person, taxes are annoying. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. If you pay $1 in taxes, it's $1 more than you want to pay. Is that fair to say?
That is absolutely fair.
Yeah.
It's more like $1.50 more than you want to pay. Right. But we get the point.
I want 50 cents back. It's true. We're all annoyed at taxes. There's no one that's not annoyed by it.
Correct.
But now
it's so complex. That's the worst part.
It is, you know, and I that I work with people. In fact,
right.
I've spent the last number of weeks in heavy, heavy, heavy tax distribution strategies for people. So I literally play with these numbers mm-hmm. daily, and it's all about management of the problem. But the reason I bring it up is that, again, we have this constant conversation in Madison that we all want to hear. We all want to hear that we could pay less in taxes. With few exceptions, but let's kind of put it into perspective as to what's actually going on. So this past session, the GOP wanted to cut to as many as $3 billion in taxes,
yes.
in taxpayers. Okay. So there were a couple of things in that bill. One was to across the board, they wanted to cut from all brackets. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was like a 15% reduction.
I don't remember the number, but that sounds fairly
ish.
Right.
You know, it might have worked out, you know, a little bit more here, a little bit less there. And then they proposed cutting income tax, state income tax on retirement income up mm-hmm. to $100,000.
Yep.
Do you have a problem with that?
No.
At all?
No.
Okay.
No, and I don't, because I look at the fact that we have such huge surpluses that the money that's sitting in surplus belongs to the taxpayer.
Do you think the money that's sitting in surplus came from excess income tax being paid or excess sales tax being collected and not redistributed?
Excess taxes, period.
That's a fuzzy answer, Dean. It's a fuzzy answer.
Fuzzy question.
Well, that's going to be a whole other debate. But it is.
But
true.
I think there's such a volume of tax dollars sitting there that are in excess that we have to make changes to get that back to the taxpayer.
That's true.
Whether it's through use tax, you know, like your sales tax, or whether it's...
All right. So if that's the case, so we can agree that the surplus has only shown up in the last, you want to say 8 years? Less than that?
I believe so. Pretty close to that.
Okay.
We got more people waving at us.
All right. We're going to have to get a curtain. I don't know what to do.
No, I love the window.
Conrad has a curtain so he doesn't get distracted by the people walking by.
But we need Conrad to be focused. We don't have to be focused.
We're going to switch suites the next time. All right, focus. So the income tax versus sales tax.
Yes.
If we agree that the surplus has only shown up in the last handful to 8 years max, mm-hmm. has anyone's income tax gone up in the last 6 to 8 years?
Are we talking dollars or percentage?
Percentage.
Percentage, no.
Oh.
I don't believe percentage has gone up.
Okay, wait. Did we have an influx of a tremendous amount of people that are paying income tax in Wisconsin?
That's a really
in
good
question.
Have you Googled all this stuff?
I have not.
So my thing is, I don't believe our tax rates have gone up.
Nope.
We've had a huge increase.
In fact, they've gone down.
We've actually had a huge increase of income changes happening because of the pressures on businesses with the lack of employees that are available to work. So we've seen a big push on increasing wages. That's been a big part of that because obviously your wages go up, you pay more income taxes.
Whose wages have gone up?
mine, yours. Well, you're independent. You don't count.
I would agree that there's been a wage push up for labor. Lack of employees leads to a rise in there. Yes. So if we argue,
been a huge increase the past 3 years.
If we argue that the normal person's wages, let's just say, is up $3 an hour as an average, is that going to make up for $8 billion? That's a hard no.
When you put a number of people on that,
it's a hard no.
Yeah.
But what did go up in the last 6 to 8 years is the amount that it cost to buy things.
Correct. Inflation.
Which is related to sales tax. Just not real hard. Yeah,
that's why that's why I said taxes have gone up.
All right.
We have a tax surplus.
All right. So we're not going to get to a clean answer on this one, but we're clearly on different sides of it. But let's go back to the tax. My point is the income taxes themselves have actually gone down over the last couple of years, the percentages that we're paying. I believe that across the board, without counting any extra credits or super deductions of any kind, overall we're down about 15% from where we have been.
So I know we have people listening that can Google these things and give us the actual facts for us.
Feel free to text in on the Civic Media app.
help us out when we get to detail.
But my point is that the tax frame itself has gone down slightly over the years. Well, double digits is not a slight number.
No.
But now we have issues where there's a huge difference between the Evers proposals and the GOP proposal. The GOP proposal, they talk about an average of $567
per, back to each person.
Yes. And the governor's plan was, I mean, literally it might have been 100. The average was 100 to 150. So obviously, someone would rather have 560 than 150. Agreed?
Right. I agree.
Except that's not real math. Because the governor's proposal didn't include a tax decrease in the top bracket. The big dollars, the people that are making more than $350,000 a year, it didn't include any. The Republican one did. Now, if they included a 15% reduction in the top bracket and you added all of those deductions in with the highest earners in the state, which honestly, you take the top dozen people compared to the rest of the state, and you know that that's an enormous number. Take that skewed the average. That when you add in those monsters, 15% off of $1 million is $150,000.
Yeah.
Right? So you got a $150,000 break up there and you're getting a $10 break down here.
Sounds like we need a flat tax.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation.
I thought I'd heard some music happening in the background.
You're
a little
hoping
bit,
so for some music. I can tell you that. Don't worry, folks. We're going to come back. We're going to have some fun tonight because we are talking red and blue, and you're going to try and find some purple in here. This is the Rational Revolution. I am Chris Alfheim. He is Dean Rash. We're talking taxes and trying to make it fun. That's all we can do is try. Come on back on the other side of the break. Rash and Chris Alfheim here on the Rational Revolution on a Thursday night. We are talking taxes from the side of the blue and the side of the red. Why? Because we keep on seeing headlines about how one party wants to do one thing and they won't let them have it, and the other side wants it. Nobody gets what they want.
Right.
So we're just trying to break things down and put it into, you know, maybe common language around the kitchen table. Again, feel free to text us on the Civic Media app. If you haven't downloaded the app, get at it. You can get at our show and all the other lovely 19 stations, right, Conrad? Pushing 20.
Yeah.
Pushing 20. Close, I hear our Appleton Tower is about to go live, which is going to connect the Oshkosh to the Green Bay. So whoop, whoop on that. Loving it.
That's cool.
All right. So back to the taxes. We're going to, you know, try to get past the disagreement on where the surplus comes from, but maybe we'll wander back that direction. But let's talk about the different things. So again, the GOP had tried and to send out an across-the-board decrease, which would have affected, including the top bracket, all the way down to the bottom. And they talked about having tax-free retirement income. And your statement was you like that idea.
Yes.
I want to talk about the 100,000 part first. Well, no, I'm going to talk about the bracket first. Theoretically, the tax bracket that Tony Evers, the tax cut that Tony Evers suggested in his budget. Oh, I like this. Jim from Appleton's on the line. Hang in there, buddy. I'll come back to you. So in his budget, he cut for the, I believe, all but the top bracket. He was also offering the cut in there. Yep. And it would have affected, again, pretty much everyone in Wisconsin except those making more than roughly $340,000. The GOP, their plan, did everybody including that. Now, my issue with that is if you understand how tax brackets work, you're working the tier up from the bottom to the bottom. So everyone is at 3.5 and only some will get to 7.65. Most of us will cap out at 5.3.
Right.
So the plan that Governor Evers put out technically was equally beneficial to every resident in Wisconsin. Everyone in the state would have gotten that break. Some would have gotten a little bit more, but all would have gotten. The wealthiest income earners would still have received their decrease on their lower tier. Agreed? So up to $340,000, they still would have gotten a break.
Okay.
Now, to a multimillionaire, somebody who's making $5 million a year,
sure,
is that going to bother them? Is that going to help them a lot? No.
Right.
But it still would have been beneficial across the board. The only difference is he's saying, you know, somebody that's making $400,000 a year probably didn't need that as much on the dollars
but
over
is that
the
his,
340.
But is that his right to make that decision of what they need and what they don't?
Well, I think it's
the
a fair assessment.
No, but, I mean.
I think it's a fair assessment to say that those and I'm in the higher brackets, have been for a long time.
Yep.
I think it's fair to say that when inflation hits and the price of gas go up and interest rates go up, it doesn't hurt as bad, right?
It doesn't, but I think it's the judgment that we sometimes put on the higher brackets saying, does it mean as much to them? And it doesn't have the same impact as somebody who's on the lower bracket, obviously.
Sure.
But
I think it's a valid argument to say, yeah, but they're still working hard. They're still doing this. But isn't there a point? You know, at what point would you say, okay, you know, we don't need to cut after a certain point. The question is, where's the line? Where is it that you feel someone is so comfortable they don't need the break? And that's where it begins to get fuzzy.
Right.
And again, ask the individual and they'll say, wherever my number is, that's that's it,
yeah.
right?
Right?
Wherever your number is. So my first issue is the I guess, gray area in the discussion when they point at each other and say, we said this, you said that. Mm-hmm. What Evers proposed was actually everyone was included in that. What GOP is representing is a major ding. Major $2 billion in our budget is a lot of money. And a lot of that comes from just the upper end, just the 12%. Now, if I'm in that 12%, I get it, right? I'd be irritated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And people should. But when you talk about this 100,000, this is an issue that I have because the normal person, and I know this because this is my field, the normal person does not have up to $100,000 in taxable income. I play strategies in taxes
right.
where we max out tax brackets to maintain and not go over.
Right.
So we may move $250,000 out of an IRA on an annual basis for 5 years so that we're maxing out at 24 brackets so as not to hit 32 and 38 on the remaining spouse.
Right.
We do that. Mm-hmm. Now, if all of a sudden everybody had the ability to, or I shouldn't say everybody, if the people who are sitting on heavy 401ks had the ability to convert $100,000 a year out of their IRA money tax-free, who's that helping?
The person who saved the money.
The person who saved the money, yes, but at the cost of what?
Because they've already paid income taxes on that.
I'm fully aware.
Through their lifetime. And I think this is where the question comes in.
Oh, no, they haven't paid. No, that's IRA money.
You're talking about your
it's retirement income money.
It's your pre-tax money, not your raw, not your post-tax.
Right.
You're correct. So, but on the disbursement, you're trying to transfer. We're going way deep here into something that you and I have talked about before, but I don't know if it's going to translate very well right now. But you're talking about somebody who's taken that 401k pre-tax dollar amount and somehow they've converted it over so they're not paying any taxes on it.
I'm saying that the GOP bill mm-hmm. would give those high asset people, high mm-hmm. finance people, a free ticket to convert up to $100,000 per year. A free ticket.
Of tax, tax-free conversion.
We would be removing, yes, we would be removing.
Okay, so that's a clause I'm not aware of.
Yeah, because that's what it's retirement income. So if it's RMDs.
Oh, you're talking about the retirement side, but not the actual income tax brackets anymore. No. So we shifted a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's part of the GOP bill.
Yeah.
So now you took it, now you're looking at it where you're going to, the GOP bill is going to reduce the tax on the top, I can't do the math in my head, the top 88, the top 12%,
cent, right.
Actually less than that because it's over 340. So you're probably talking about 8% of the population. Mm-hmm. The GOP wants to reduce the tax on everything over 340, and they want to let anybody take out money, retirement income, and not have to pay tax on that. Now, if it were just on an RMD level, I could maybe get behind that in some cases, meaning the required minimum distributions.
Right. Right.
The average person in Wisconsin, their RMD may be, you know, $2,000 to $15,000.
So what if we shift the discussion from the income tax side of it, right? So it's really a tax burden on everything that we're going through. And I had a really good thought. It just slipped my mind. This is great as you get older.
You can't validate that then.
No, I can't validate my comment. But I think the conversation has to shift from, it has to shift from the tax burden that we have overall. There are states that have little to no income tax whatsoever. Is it necessary that we have to tax income in the state? I'm throwing this out there I'm not saying
there's lots
that's
of options. There's lots of options.
We just have to redo the structure of this whole thing. It's chaos right now.
Can we agree it's a little bit broken?
That I'll give you.
All right, it's a little bit broken.
Yeah. So we got that going.
We are heading in. Quick break coming in here. Again, Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Alfheim. This is Mr. Dean Rash, and we are talking taxes, GOP, and the Democrats, and how we talk about them in the state of Wisconsin. Come on back after the break.
All right. All right.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Alfheim.
Hello and welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I am Chris Alfheim. I'm with my friend, Mr. Dean Rash. Jim in Appleton, our friend, is kicking in on our conversation about Wisconsin taxes. He says, good evening, folks. The gentleman, see, that's respectful. Thanks, Jim.
I appreciate that.
The gentleman mentioned the F tax option. However, I'm afraid he misspoke. He didn't say fair tax. Thanks,
no.
Jim.
No, I said F tax.
You said flat tax. So we'll have a little conversation on the flat tax. We were just saying before we came on the air that it would be nice in politics. And Dean and I are the few that kind of like it. We like the political world a little bit. But it would be nice if people would be willing to admit that they weren't completely right.
I think what I said was, you know, I don't think I'm completely right, but I am.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah.
But I think there's too much of that. That's what we were talking about.
I know.
There's no conversation. It's right. I'm right, you're wrong, and there's no in between.
Right. The issue that I have with fair tax, and I have thought in the past that I was a supporter of this. And as I learn, as I talk to more people, I know that there are a lot of cases where it does not work. But I guess my bigger issue.
Are you referring to fair or flat?
Flat.
Okay, because you said fair. I just want.
Well, that's because
sure.
I was reading at the same time. But flat tax. I used to think, and this is a number of years back, that the concept of a flat tax didn't sound too bad to me. Mm-hmm. If everybody just paid, you know, let's say on
10%,
a 5 or 10%. Let's say everybody under a certain amount was 5, and everybody over a certain amount was 10. That is still progressive. So technically, that's not true.
Right.
But I thought that maybe that wasn't such a bad idea. But the problem is there's so much income that isn't taxed at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we could just, and again, I know your answer is going to be they're just following the law.
True.
Well, then fix that.
Well, that part I agree with 100%.
Then fix that.
Yeah, you can't put the law out there, right, and then yell at somebody for using it, right, the way it was intended.
I mean, I'm a self-employed person. Mm-hmm. I run it as an LLC. Yep. If I wanted to, I could run it as a C corp, mm-hmm, and then only the money that I would pull out, as opposed to the amount of money that I made, would be taxed, and right, it would probably save me. That's not the way that I choose to run my business, but it's perfectly legal to do so.
Correct.
You know, so there's a lot of different ways, and I think that's the problem. When you start talking about what seems to be a simple solution, you realize that there are so many different veils going on that make it not. And in the end, those with fewer tricks in their bags, mm-hmm, which tends to be
less affluent,
let's just say the 60% of the population easily, mm-hmm, easily 60% of the population, they don't have any tricks in their bag.
Right.
So they end up taking it in the shorts. And I don't think that's the intent of this.
No, and I'll go back to, you know, and I do appreciate, Jim, I really thank you for calling me a gentleman. That doesn't happen very often, so I really appreciate that. That's like, you know, holiday giving to me right now.
He doesn't know you.
Oh, that's true. Well, he'll get to know me. How about that? But I will say to the comment about, you know, I didn't say fair tax, but then the question I always come with is, what is a fair tax?
There's no answer to that.
There's no answer to it. So how can you, we can't just use a fair tax analogy and say, well, it's got to be a fair tax.
No.
We don't, that's different for everybody we ask.
One time back in the dangling Chad era.
Oh my God, we're going way back.
I know, in the dangling Chad, that's when I first started paying attention to politics. I walked into my boss at the time and I said to him, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And he looked at me and he kind of tilted his head and his answer was, well, I guess the more money you make, the more Republican you become.
Yeah.
I heard that statement back then and I'll never forget it because
I've
is true. I think where people are and then as their circumstances change, then their need, mm-hmm, to, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think it's a moving target. This is why we're never really satisfied. I do think that, you know, when you talk about taxes, I think that many times the assumption is that anyone that is making six figures, mm-hmm, is rolling in the hay and life is good. And I'm begging you to realize that is not true.
That's not that much
it's
money.
It's just not true. It's not, because what happens is you start working your way out of there's a lot of perks that are written into the tax code. You have children, you, mm-hmm, have daycare, you have all these different things. Based on your income, there might be support for health insurance. There's a lot of things going on. And then it stops.
Right.
It all stops. I went from paying, I went from having a kid in school to financial aid to no longer getting financial aid to getting a credit for the tuition that I paid to not even being able to deduct college education.
Right.
All within a few short years. Now, first, I'm not going to complain, right? Because if the penalty of doing well in life is that you pay more taxes, I guess I'm okay with that. I really am. So, but my point is, that's how many thousands of dollars per year that I couldn't even write off.
Right.
Much less get a deduction. Those things happen as that income goes up. So I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying a little bit of empathy. It is not perfect in most households these days. So please, if the assumption is anything over six figures and you have no issues in the world, not true.
But we have to appreciate that not everybody's home situation is the same.
Well, I wish people would realize that.
And as you know, Carrie and I, what our income is, right? Mm. But we're above that six-figure number combined. But with medical situations like I've had over my lifetime, my tax bill sometimes has to wait until my medical bills are paid.
Sure.
And so that's not, and I don't hit the threshold.
Sure.
To be able to even deduct anything off of medical bills.
Yeah.
So you never know somebody's personal situation.
Yeah.
We're not living high off the hog.
No.
We're not really going anywhere, doing anything lavish this, lavish that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, every year I got to write a check to the tax man because all my deductions grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they don't allow me to deduct the dog as a dependent, even though she's fairly dependent. But I mean, it's just, this is just the reality of the situation. Right. As we go through life, things change. So when we talk about the tax situation for everybody, it's a difficult thing to fix.
Yeah.
But we just don't want to fix it in some sense, yeah, because as politicians, because city council, we want money because we need it for services. We want to make our cities great. We want to make our cities, some place that people want to be at. And I think the state wants to do the same thing.
I think that what I really would like people to hear, mm-hmm, is that many times you hear loud voices again from the edges. So you have people on the GOP side that are screaming from a higher up floor,
right,
that they want more because they're giving more. And then we hear a lot of arguments that we need help on the lower rungs, which, right, I think is true as well. But I think there honestly is not enough conversation about the middle class. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that the beef of the hurt, the biggest hurt that's really gone on, is coming from the middle and the lower. Mm-hmm. The lower always will have issues. I mean, we'll talk about inflation hurting some segments and not. I don't, in the end, it didn't really matter how much a carton of eggs was going to be. I was going to buy a carton of eggs.
Right.
I could gripe about it.
Right.
It doesn't matter how much a gallon of gas is. I'm still going to go where I'm going.
Yeah.
That is a luxury that many have, and that's wonderful. That's not the case for many, many people. And I don't want to discount those that are truly, truly struggling on a daily basis, because we know they're there.
Right.
But I do believe that the middle class is disappearing. I think it is now a lower middle class, and that lower middle class is taking it in the shorts. They're not getting the subsidies for health insurance. Mm-hmm. The self-employed, the family that is running a business mm-hmm, that's trying to do health insurance. Listen, 60% of the population may be paying nothing for their health insurance.
Right.
I know my out-of-pocket on an annual basis, I'm running every other year right now, maxing out my out-of-pocket. Mm-hmm. Between premiums, deductibles, and copays, that's $24,000 a year.
Right.
And I haven't had anything major.
Right.
That's real.
That's ridiculous, too.
It's ridiculous, and it's
real.
That
changed with a certain law that went into place.
I'm not on Obamacare. That's a group plan.
Right.
So the health insurance issue, the point is health insurance itself is strange. So I guess my point in that, and we're going to wrap up the tax conversation, wherever you are on the scale, mm-hmm, if you are on the highest end of the scale, good for you. You cannot expect the same attention to problems when you, again, from the 43rd floor, you can't smell inflation. Let's be honest. There are people on the bottoms of the rungs that we absolutely need to pay attention to, but right, there's also the middle class. And I think that we have to, both sides need to be appreciative. Where we're saying everybody's idea is horrible except for mine.
Right.
There's the issue.
That's the issue.
There's the issue.
We both agree on 100%.
Yeah. I mean, we have got to come up to common sense. And I do not believe that we can afford to take, $2 billion out of our asset. By the way, how many times is the GOP going to use the answer when the Democrats come up with an idea, their response is, well, that's one-time money, we can't do that. They never, ever, ever want to commit to something long-term that the Democrats want to do, because they refer to the surplus as
taxpayer
one-time money, as if it won't be there. But if we all of a sudden put all kinds of tax breaks in, are you just going to go change that next year when the surplus is gone? Or the year after? How's that going
to
work?
I guess you would have to. But I think the idea is,
imagine how ugly that would be.
But I think the difference is to try to balance it out so that you're not bringing in the big surplus. How you do that?
I don't
know if it works.
Oh, I have a great idea.
Uh-oh, this is going to be good.
Let's talk about shared revenue.
I that's a good one, actually.
Yes. So shared revenue, we've talked about that many, many times. But come on. I know we got a little piece of bread from the state.
Yeah,
they gave us in Appleton, I don't know what your number was, but in Appleton, we came in just shy of $2 million.
We were a little under that because, as we know, we're about a third the size of yours.
Now we did check that. Thank you. Yes.
But I think we were right around $900,000 somewhere around there.
Okay.
So we got a pretty decent, and I don't remember for sure the exact number, but it was a pretty decent number for us.
So for us, and again, of that, we had to put, there had to be a, going towards safety and public care.
Right.
So we put, I believe, 650 or maybe even a million out of our 2 million towards the police department, just towards the increase in wages. Mm-hmm. And that was the equivalent of, I think, 10% of what the number was. Yep. So the numbers are huge. I truly believe, in my opinion, the surplus has come from excess sales tax because the cost of things are up. Therefore, the tax is on a larger number, which causes that. And couple that with the fact that we have reduced the amount of money. The money going into the municipalities and the counties is truly, they cut out any inflationary change on it 12 years ago.
It's been stagnant for
12 years of inflation. Have we had any inflation? The Republicans like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We sure did.
Yeah.
So Appleton was literally behind, 38% behind in state revenue from where it was 12 years ago. So they gave us $2 million back. That's not anywhere near where we are.
Well, you know, what's happened with municipalities, because they weren't getting that shared revenue to keep up with the services and the increased costs that go with it year after year, is there's a lot more bonding going on.
Right.
So a lot more debt that communities are taking
Which
on.
Which means then what happens?
Well,
property taxes.
Property taxes are affected by that. It depends on how you manage that. Now, we've done a really good job of
managing.
Let's
just restate. You said because of the lack of shared revenue, there's less money flowing to the cities, which then pushes out more bonding, which means we have to do what? Raise more property taxes.
Correct.
So because the states are not kicking out the dollars they used to, the cities and municipalities have asked to have had to ask for more and give less.
Right. But we've also...
But we're sitting on an $8 billion excess pot.
Yeah, and remember,
and
we're
you
limited.
Tell me it came from income tax.
Yeah,
you're out of your flipping mind.
We haven't Googled it yet for facts. We're getting
you are
close
out
to
of your
that.
Ma- I want. We're going to get a whiteboard in here, and we're going to work
whiteboard.
Out these two solutions. And I assure you, I'm going to win. I am going to win.
Well,
this is the rational revolution.
No winning or losing. Remember, conversation.
I know. We actually are having a good time here. You can talk about politics and taxes without killing each other. We can even laugh our way through it. I hope you're enjoying this conversation. Bobby McGee is on, heading into our last break. Come on back.
I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time. I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is Chris Alfheim. Unfortunately, I ran Dean over with a truck during the break.
It was a small truck.
No, we're still here. And you know what? This is the whole point, right? We should be able to. Wouldn't it be nice if sitting out in your garage, you could have a beer and talk about different opinions on how taxes and, you know, city things should work and be able to laugh, you know, talk about it, have an opinion, and then laugh your way through the commercial and come on back and keep the conversation going. That's why we do the show.
And that's what beer does for you. Helps you laugh more.
I would strongly recommend you ration that, because I found once you get to a certain threshold, those rules of civil behavior tend to dwindle.
That can be true.
No. All right. No. All right. So sliding out of our last conversation, we were talking a little bit about the shared revenue, which I could talk about for days, but we're going to move on. And we're going to talk a little bit about school vouchers. School vouchers. Now, neither one of us work in the education world, but the school voucher conversation has been a big deal. And the GOP wants, you know, and actually wants it expanded. They basically want anybody to be able to do it. And the school systems are screaming from the top of their lungs that it's killing them. The funding is not there. So, Dean, I'm going to let you go first. Tell us why you love them.
So, as a son of a school teacher, retired school teacher, I do like school vouchers. But I like them for a particular reason. And that is for those families that are, for whatever circumstances, are living in a failing school district, they should have the right to help their kids get an education.
Which is the pitch that was given by Walker way back when,
Yeah, and Dean is saying the same thing.
Okay.
Because, you know, for those that can afford to send their kids to private school, parochial school, it's an advantage sometimes, not all the time, but it's an advantage. But for those that are stuck in a situation where they've got a failing school system, it's nice if they have an option. And so that's where I appreciate it. And I think from the school district standpoint, if a school district is struggling by losing students because of vouchers, then they find a way to improve your school district.
Well, that would be nice, except they're funding both schools.
They're not fully funding both schools.
Let me back up a little bit, because I think some of this stuff isn't understood. I know people that are utilizing the voucher system. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of people that can't stand the voucher system.
Yep.
But I think that there's a lot of misgiving. A lot of the public thinks that if they take advantage of the voucher, that it's basically dollar for dollar.
It's not. Right.
And what I mean to say by that is if we take one student out of a school, that, you know, that child, that voucher that's mm-hmm. then given to the private school is, I think the number's going to be 12,000 this year in Appleton or in Wisconsin. So $12,000 is given from the public school mm-hmm. to the private school mm-hmm. to take care of that person.
Right.
Now, we understand that.
Right.
Now, what part of the school that child attended, and let's, for our discussion, let's just say it's a perfectly good school. Right.
Sure.
There are no known
not
issues.
Yep.
They're perfectly normal. That school, how is it that they reduce their budget by $12,000 to pay for that voucher?
Well, and they really can't, because their teachers that they have to hire, their schools, everything like that, they still have those costs. I get that part. And if I remember correctly, and this is where maybe you know more about this than I do, but I don't believe the full value of the student in the voucher program is paid to the private school. Some of that stays back into the public school system. Is that correct?
I don't think so.
I thought I read something like that, where some of these private schools or some of these schools are taking in these students, but they're not getting the full value of it.
They're not getting what they consider the rate, perhaps, but the $12,000 is going nonetheless. It's going.
But I don't know if that's the full amount for the student. I'm just throwing this out there saying, I read something recently that talked about there is a disparity between how much the receiving school is getting versus what the total value of the student. We're just talking about the student as a revenue source right now.
I know. It's sad.
I don't like that. But anyway.
The issue that I have is, you know, again, on general, there are circumstances. There are rural districts. There are issues where they can't, right? It's hard to maintain the smaller the community to try and maintain the school system. And so I think the concept of everyone deserves a quality education is valid.
Yep.
I do not want to say anything other than that.
Right.
My issue is when you have a combination of an increase in vouchers mm-hmm. and you have the revenue situation happening to the school districts the same way that it happened to the municipalities and counties, but worse, that I don't care what whiteboard you use, that is not good math. So now going back to, you know, your first comment, which if you can go to a better school, why wouldn't you? Well,
right.
now we're exacerbating the problem and now putting our public schools into a situation of not being as good as they could. Keep in mind, to be a public school, do you know how many how many I's need to be dotted and T's need to be crossed mm-hmm. in administration compared to what the private and the parochial schools have to do?
The government regulation that goes with that?
Yes. For the good of
the student.
The student, right?
And the union.
So it's not like the schools are doing all this stuff because they necessarily want to. They are told what they must do. It's mandated.
No.
So my issue is, if we agree on the philosophy of a good education is deserved by all, mm-hmm. wouldn't it be fair to say that we should make sure that the schools that we promise in our own state rules, mm-hmm. make sure that we are funding them adequately enough so that we aren't the problem? You can't point the finger at a school for having, you know, there aren't enough teachers or there isn't enough room or there's too many kids in a class when you aren't giving them the money that they need by far. You can't say that.
But
they're behind by 40%. You can. There's always going to be more to that.
There's more to that.
But
you know, because
philosophically, you have to fund the schools the same way you have to fund the police department.
And I agree with that. But you have to look at the big picture on it too.
I'm looking at the big picture. The big picture is if we don't educate people, trouble happens.
But the story I'm thinking of right now, and this is another one where I know
30 seconds.
I know I do. I'm watching the time. But what I'm saying is there is a district in this area that was talking about the fact they've relied so heavily on vouchers in the past or getting the exchange of students out of other areas. That number has dropped for them. And so they were leaning on that as a revenue stream. And now they're struggling with budgets because they're not getting the students coming in from the other school districts. So it's going both ways because some of these school districts are playing against the other ones to grab students, recruiting over.
They've been put in that situation.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I mean, I education is all. Education and communication are the things that solve almost everything.
I agree with that.
Sprinkle in a little cash, and it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to take care of them. We are heading in this. We're done for tonight. But I got to tell you, next week we will have our former Congressman Reed Ribble will be here with us talking all things. Listen, if you are a Christmas person, please have a Merry, Merry Christmas. If you are celebrating another holiday, do that.